Welcome to Local Talk, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for the next hour. Thank you for listening in. We have numerous interesting topics to cover. Will there be an Ames City ordinance against human trafficking? Are you in the middle of moving and could use some tips on how to protect yourself in the process? Or would you like to hear a little bit about moments in the local Ames history of popular music? Do you know what Genuine John's was? Do you know what the bus stop was? Stick around and find out about this and lots, lots more. I think you'll enjoy the show. Dennis Hart is coming right up with a summary of local news for the week. First, I just want to take a minute with you to talk about my favorite topic, the wild ones, experiences with wild animals in Ames city limits. So I have two stories about deer that I want to talk about. One is that yesterday I looked out the backyard and I saw a deer who had a broken leg. Her front right leg was broken and she was grazing, a full-grown deer, and she would try to use that leg, and every time she put her weight on that leg, she would sink down basically to her knees. And it's interesting because I had observed this deer last fall. I saw her with the herd, and she had a broken leg then. And I said to myself, this deer is never going to survive the winter. And yet here she is after this long, harsh winter and is continuing to live on, essentially on three legs, which is astonishing when you think about what a deer is as an animal of prey and what that says about the existence or lack thereof of natural selection within the Ames city limits. It's amazing that such an animal would survive a winter like that and not fall prey to any other hungry predator. The other story I want to tell you is kind of a little bit stranger. Falls under the category of animals making mistakes, which apparently does happen. I actually once saw a squirrel fall out of a tree when he was trying to jump. So animals make mistakes too. So this was a mother deer, and she was in my neighbor's backyard with her baby. Her baby wasn't newborn, but it was a young baby. And she was in the backyard grazing with her baby. My neighbor has a fence around his yard that's about 8 or 10 feet high. It's a chain link fence. The mother decided at some point she wanted to leave the yard, and so she leaped over the fence. And the baby was following her, and he stops, and he goes, huh? What? And I don't know how the two got reunited. I moved on with my life, but I'm going to try and be charitable here to this mother deer and assume this was a rookie error, and maybe this was her first year of being a mama deer. So anyway, those are stories from the wild ones, observing wild animals in Ames, Iowa. Here is Dennis Hart with a summary of the local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. Take it away, Dennis.
Thanks very much. Let's kick things off the way we usually do on these Fridays by taking a look back at what made news last Saturday. And what made news was word that the two men arrested in connection with a shooting that caused Boone schools to be locked down had been identified. They were 29-year-old Charles Silas Curry of Des Moines and 25-year-old Nathaniel William Gilmore of Chicago. They were picked up after police received reports of gunshots in the 1300 block of Carroll Street in Boone. When authorities got to the scene, they found a man suffering from a non-life-threatening gunshot wound. Curry fled on foot while Gilmore drove off, but authorities apprehended both men. The shooting resulted in Boone schools and the Boone campus of the Des Moines Area Community College to be locked down. Also Saturday, a report that local law enforcement and public safety officials took part in abduction training in Ames. They learned about strategies for search and rescue incidents. A dozen law enforcement officers from several agencies were there. The training was sponsored by Star One Search and Rescue, a Story County volunteer organization that supports law enforcement officers throughout Iowa in responding to lost and missing persons incidents. There was more last Saturday, including word that safety was the prime topic of discussion during a meeting of representatives from several Ames neighborhoods. Groups from the Tripp Street, the Oakwood Forest, the West Street, the Old Town, and the Roosevelt Neighborhood Associations met with city staff and law enforcement to talk about issues that centered on homelessness in certain neighborhoods and how residents can handle instances of homeless people camping or squatting in vacant residences. There was also a report that the Iowa State University Police Department had hired its first mental health advocate and a therapy dog to help with the state's growing mental health crisis. The advocate is Kinsey Phillips, who graduated from Iowa State in 2017 with a degree in psychology and animal science. The therapy dog is her 8-year-old golden retriever named Zosia, who can be used for situations such as welfare checks or providing support for trauma victims. And one more note from Saturday, also about law enforcement, a feature story about Ames Police Detective Cole Hippen. He recently received his master's degree from Simpson College in Indianola and was chosen to speak at the college's commencement ceremony. He said it was a bit stressful, but that it was an honor to be chosen to speak. He's worked with the Ames Police Department since 2009. Sunday brought word about an Ames mother who is raising money to help grieving families. Rebecca Finch is hoping to honor her daughter by raising money to help give local families experiencing stillbirth or infant loss more time with their babies. She's partnering with a nonprofit group to buy a cuddle cot from Mary Greeley Medical Center in Ames. That's a cooled bassinet that slows the natural changes that take place after death, giving parents more time to grieve, bond, and say goodbye to their babies in the privacy of their hospital rooms. Rebecca Finch's daughter Eleanor was stillborn last year. Sunday also brought word that repairs on Grand Avenue in Ames would resume this past Monday. That meant traffic would be restricted while crews repair the sewer system between 12th and 18th Streets. The project is supposed to be finished by next Friday. There was also a preview of the National Bike to Work Week celebration in Ames, which began this past Monday with a free continental-style breakfast in front of City Hall. Tomorrow morning, the Ames Mayor and City Council bike ride is scheduled to take place starting at City Hall. This past week was also National Public Gardens Week, and Sunday brought word that Ryman Gardens would celebrate it by having a free admission day today, Friday. Tuesday brought word that representatives from the Ames Chamber of Commerce had gone to the nation's capital to meet with various officials there and to talk about such issues as trade, renewable energy, immigration, and infrastructure. One of the chief issues the chamber wanted to talk about was the future of the trade agreement between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, which, if ratified, would replace NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. The federal government provides up to $10 billion in direct aid to soybean, corn, pork, dairy, and other producers in an effort to counteract the harm caused by American trade disputes with China, Mexico, Canada, and other countries. Recently, the Ames Chamber of Commerce had been talking with a Chinese food manufacturing company about relocating to Story County. The company told the chamber the Chinese government was not interested in investing money in the United States because of ongoing trade tensions. That $50 million project would have produced 40 jobs for rural Story County. On the court beat, there was word Tuesday about several cases, including one in which an Ames man pleaded not guilty to charges he sexually abused two women on the same night. Trial for 33-year-old Jonah Paulus is scheduled for June 18th. In another case, an Ames man pleaded not guilty to charges he stabbed a German Shepherd puppy and dumped it into a trash bin. 20-year-old Rashidi Simba was charged with animal torture, and his trial is scheduled to start June 25th. And one more legal note, a woman who Ames police said helped her boyfriend hold a man at gunpoint before stealing the victim's car pleaded guilty. 23-year-old Alicia Collum will be sentenced this coming Monday. And one more note from Tuesday, a report that Ames City Council members and staff had greeted bicycle riders at City Hall on Monday as part of Bike to Work Week in Ames. One of the bicyclists had come from Kelly to Ames and was greeted, like the others, with coffee, a continental breakfast, and conversation at City Hall before they all rode off to resume the rest of their day. Wednesday brought word that the City of Ames is now hoping to hold the bond election involving funding for the Healthy Life Center in September, not August, as it had previously wanted to. The change in plans means voters could go to the polls on September 10th to decide whether to approve a $28.6 million bond. The change in dates was prompted by uncertainty around a state legislative bill that changes the dates special elections can be held. There have also been delays in finalizing agreements with the city's funding partners in the Healthy Life Center project and in receiving all the private donation pledges in writing. The city will hold a series of Healthy Life Center informational meetings next month. The first one will take place on Monday, June 10th, at 6 p.m. in Edwards School. Meanwhile, Iowa State University junior Devin Leeson is taking over as the university's Student Ames City Council member. He will serve a one-year term. Leeson is a political science major at Iowa State. Wednesday also brought word of a restaurant opening and a restaurant closing in the area. The opening was actually a reopening of Cole's Restaurant and Ice Cream Shop in Slater. It had been closed since a fire in April, but it reopened last Saturday. The closing is here in Ames. The Fighting Burrito restaurant in Campustown announced it was shutting its doors this week after almost 16 years in business. Owner Matthew Goodman said even though the Ames location is closing, the Fighting Burrito located in Des Moines will stay open. Yesterday, Thursday, brought plenty of news, including word that sweeping changes will soon be coming to parking in Campustown. The Ames City Council unanimously approved the restriping of the 200 block of Welch Avenue and changes to the timing to parking meters to reduce the number of 10-hour parking spots within Campustown parking lots. The idea is to create greater turnover of spaces for visitors and customers in the district. The move also includes a switch to 2 hours for parking limits in Lot X in the 2400 and 2500 blocks of Chamberlain Avenue. At the same time, the council unanimously agreed to hold off on any decisions regarding the proposed Welch Avenue-Chamberlain Avenue Plaza until the future of Fire Station No. 2 is addressed or following the completion of the Welch Avenue project. The council also instructed city staff to start the process of repealing the city's rental cap ordinance that was adopted last summer. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds has signed a bill that bans municipal rental caps. Yesterday also brought a report that for the second time this school year, Ames school officials are responding to complaints that Ames students misbehaved themselves at an athletic event by using racially insensitive language. This time, it was at Tuesday night's Ames girls soccer game against Marshalltown. The Marshalltown coach said some of his players told him about comments that came from the Ames student section, comments allegedly made about Marshalltown's goalkeeper. Ames school officials issued a statement saying the comments were unacceptable. This past February, the district released a similar statement after complaints that some Ames students were making racial chants during the Ames-Des Moines North sub-state finals basketball game. There was more yesterday, including word that YSS is asking for the community's help as it looks forward to relocating its Ames residential treatment home for teenage girls. The original home at 712 Burnett Avenue was damaged by fire last June. 8 residents and 2 staff members were evacuated without injury. Since then, residents and staff have moved to 2 different sites, and they are about to move into another home in a residential neighborhood north of downtown. YSS officials said they are in need of donations of several items, as well as volunteers to help throughout the transition. There was also a report yesterday that the accused gunman in the Huxley apartment complex shooting is set to plead guilty. 22-year-old Montrell McClellan was accused in connection with the incident in the 100 block of National Drive in Huxley, in which shots were fired into a unit. No one was injured in the March incident. There was also a report that one of the finalists for the Ames Assistant City Manager position made her public presentation on Wednesday at the Ames Library. Deb Shildroth has worked in Story County government for nearly 30 years. She said she's knowledgeable about city projects and staff. And one more story before I go, the report of the happy ending for Moose, the German Shepherd puppy who was stabbed and dumped into a trash bin in Ames last month. The puppy now has a new lease on life and a new family. More than 75 applications came into the Ames Animal Shelter from people who wanted to adopt Moose, and the family that eventually got him already has a German Shepherd that Moose can play with. And that's your happy ending from a week's worth of news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, planning to take the weekend off now, but promising to return right back here to this very seat on Monday with a look at what made news all around Iowa. In the meantime, go ahead. Have a safe, happy, and healthy weekend.
She drives me crazy to find young cannibals. Wishing I had time to play the whole song, but managed to get at least part of that guitar solo in there. Miss the Fine Young Cannibals. This is Local Talk, Voice of Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for the hour. Right now is moving time for a lot of people in Ames. If you're moving, KHOI reporter Joy B has some valuable tips for you. And if you're not moving, stay with us anyway. It's good information to have, share with your friends and family, or just keep for future use. Here's Joy.
Each year, students move in and out of apartments at this time of the year. Usually the transition goes well, but it can also happen in our community that people moving in and out of apartments, especially students, can fall victim to abuses such as illegal leasing, loss of deposits, and unfair extra charges due to lack of legal knowledge of lease laws. When these things occur, the consequences can be severe. Students, especially lower-income students, sometimes end up homeless with serious barriers of safety and well-being. Some students fail to graduate due to homelessness. There are services in the area that can help, like Student Legal Aid Services and Story County Legal Services. Preston Burris is with the Ames Tenants Union, and I spoke with him about ways for people to protect themselves. I started asking him what can go wrong.
Some common illegal leasing provisions in Ames, mandatory carpet cleaning fees, have been ruled by Iowa courts as of a couple years ago to be illegal, and landlords have to demonstrate that the carpets have more than just normal wear and tear and that they are in need of professional cleaning. They're not allowed to make you pay for professional cleaning without demonstrating that. But most leases in Ames still require people to pay upwards of $100 at the end of the leasing term to pay for carpet cleaning, and that's illegal.
Okay, and it's illegal because if it's just normal wear and tear, then you shouldn't have to pay to get it professionally cleaned. It's just when it's extreme that a tenant could be held liable.
Another common illegal leasing provision is that the landlords can have access to the apartment 24/7 without notice beforehand. That is illegal under Iowa law. Landlords are required to give 24 hours notice before entering your apartment. So that's another one to look out for.
Yeah, because that's to protect you
and
them, because you want to be aware that someone's entering your apartment. You don't just want to be surprised or scared.
Be aware of your rights. If your landlord is trying to do something illegal, email them and let them know that you know what they're doing is illegal.
And seek your advice. As far as taking pictures, when you move in an apartment, you have a move-in checklist. And why is that important to take pictures?
So that at the end of your leasing term, when you're trying to get your security deposit back, if you have a copy of that move-in sheet and if you've documented the state of the apartment with pictures and you've sent those pictures to a third source that can verify that they were taken when they were taken, you have a case against landlords trying to pull a fast one and dock you for things that were just there before you moved in.
So you want to also make sure and document things with dates and times and location. And a couple other important things are to look at amenities, if they offer the property company any amenities. You know, things like heat paid, utilities paid, water paid. And if they don't, to look and call the city of Ames and give them the address of the place you're considering. And they'll tell you the average cost of the utilities, so you're not surprised with the $200 heat bill. And then also the security of the building. Do they have security doors? Is it on a bus line? If it's on a bus line, how far would you have to walk to get to school and home from work? And then, you know, the reputation of the apartment property company. How can you find out about the reputation? Should I look online or some other means?
You can look online. I would caution when looking at online reviews to take all the really positive ones with a grain of salt, because it is very common practice in Ames for landlords to artificially inflate their positive reviews. We've seen apartment complexes where the people who work for the property manager will leave five-star reviews. We've seen instances where people who are taken to tour the apartment and sign leases often get bribed with candy to write a review when they don't even live there yet. So it's important to read the bad reviews, because those are usually pretty trustworthy. I'm not saying that all the good reviews are false, but to seriously take them with a grain of salt, because in Ames especially, they care a lot about their star rating and they will do a lot to artificially inflate positivity.
So I know one thing I did was I checked the place out in the day and night, and I did find where one place was actually had some drug activity in a rental house where I was considering, because I went at night when nobody was around and watched to see what was going on at that place, and I did suspect something. So it was good to find that out, so I didn't end up renting that property. And also, you do see some people going into the apartment if you get a chance to ask them in the hallway or outside, or if you know anybody that lives in that building, it's good to ask if you can what they think of the property, how they enjoyed or did not enjoy living there. That's one way to do it.
Just a caution against newer properties. A lot of the newer buildings were made really quickly to try and cash in on the student population boom that happened a few years back. And they were oftentimes made very cheaply. And we've seen apartment complexes that don't have windows that open, are not up to fire code at all, and are just very poorly made, very thin walls.
So really make sure that there's an escape route and that your windows open, that
yeah,
and that your fire alarms are up to code.
Mm-hmm.
And then who likes having to hear the neighbors?
Yeah.
So you want to check the sound quality, possibly.
Yeah.
What is a resource, Preston, that people should look at to know their rights?
We usually refer people to Iowa Code 562A, which is the Uniform Residential Landlord and Tenant Law that will tell everyone what their rights are as tenants and what landlord's rights are as well.
How do you find out about your rights as far as the tenant union goes? You come to meetings and you'll show people or teach people about those codes and rights?
We've held rights workshops before. If you follow the union on social media, if we hold another one of those in the future, we will advertise for it.
You have meetings every month. Can you tell me how many times you meet a month?
We have two general meetings a month and then the occasional social night or rental rights workshop. We have a multitude of events.
So you actually help people learn how to look for their rights, how to read a lease correctly?
Earlier this year, we held a lease reading party where we exchanged leases and we looked for illegal provisions in them.
Yeah, because it's kind of overwhelming when you're looking for a place and then you're handed like a 5-page lease mm-hmm. with thousands of words. But it is good to know, you know, maybe if you get locked out, you're charged an enormous amount of money to have someone come out and let you in, especially after hours. They tend to have extra charges if they're closed for the day, getting a new key made, and then pet fees too. So it is good to really read over your lease and get a little knowledgeable about your rights to protect yourself. And so that's really good that you teach that. And then can you tell me a little bit about your websites or contact information?
Ames Tenants Union on Facebook. That's where we post and advertise for all of the events we have, all the meetings we have. So that's a really good place to follow us. We also have a Twitter at Ames Tenant, and our email is amestenantsunion@gmail.com. If you email us, we will respond to you.
Again, this is something that benefits the community because it's teaching you your own rights, how to protect yourself. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Joy B. and Preston Burris. This is Local Talk. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour. At its regular April meeting on the 16th, Ames City Council held a hearing about combating illicit sex trafficking and illegitimate massage therapy businesses in the Story County area. The hearing was held at the request of the Iowa Network Against Human Trafficking and Slavery, a statewide group hoping to see city ordinances against trafficking being passed by local municipalities throughout Iowa that would empower local officials and local law enforcement to regulate and investigate massage businesses that would be suspected of human trafficking. Members of the City Council discussed various ordinances that have been already put into place across the state of Iowa, particularly those in Des Moines, Iowa City, Johnston, and Cedar Rapids. Other considerations about what is the right amount of local involvement were discussed by City Council members during a meeting which lasted more than an hour. The hearing resulted in the adoption of a motion to begin the process of investigating implementation of an ordinance similar to the one in Des Moines, but tailored to suit the needs of Ames and Story County. Before getting to this decision, numerous presentations were made, including ones by Dr. George Blitzos of the Iowa Network Against Human Trafficking and Slavery, massage therapist Michelle DeMarie, Ames City Police, Assistant City Manager Brian Phillips, and members of the public, including citizens who are concerned about trafficking and many owners of massage therapy businesses. City Council members participated actively throughout the hearing. Many asked pointed questions that indicated they had come prepared. Opening statements were made by Ames Chief of Police Saikosh.
Trafficking and exploitation are very real issues across the country and unfortunately also in Iowa. We're here tonight to discuss regulation of massage services, but I think it's important to note that trafficking also occurs in a number of other settings. We know it occurs in construction, retail, agriculture. It's all around us, unfortunately. Trafficking cases for law enforcement are long, complex, and difficult cases. Victims are moved around the state. They're moved around the country. Part of that is to interfere with development of trusting relationships that we need to prosecute the traffickers. With respect to massage establishments, the premise behind most local regulations is to require evidence of state licensure and allow city officials on the premises to verify that that local requirement of holding state licensure is being adhered to.
Assistant Manager Brian Phillips.
As we look at the different alternatives you might take, there's a pretty wide spectrum of different levels of local government involvement in this particular profession. Do you want local involvement, and to what extent do you want that to occur? So those are really the questions we would need to understand if you wanted us to proceed.
My name is Michelle DeMarie. I am a licensed massage therapist. I'm here today on behalf of my profession, for lack of a better way of putting it. It never occurred to me that there would be individuals that would establish illicit practices under the guise of practicing massage. It saddens me, it sickens me to know that there are people being victimized. On behalf of myself, and I have 10 wonderful therapists here with me, and I know there's several others in the room, that basically are asking the council to please consider helping us. We have 49 actively licensed massage therapists here in town. I'm not sure if any of you were aware of that, but that's a lot of massage therapists. We all love our industry. We're very saddened that it's been tarnished by these individuals. And I think it's kind of unique that we're asking for something like this. The state just doesn't appear to have the capacity to review all of the concerns and complaints that are registered. So again, while these illicit businesses are open, there really is a difficult way for the local authorities to get that foot in the door. Another thing important to mention is you can walk into an establishment and maybe the owner or manager will have their therapist say that they can only work under one license. And I hope that most of you know, and if you didn't before, you will now. We are all required to maintain an individual license. So if somebody from the community walks into a place of business and ask the therapist to see their license, and they say, well, I don't have one, but my manager does, that's an immediate red flag. We don't want these places of business in our communities. I know you don't either. So I feel that a local ordinance would be a complement to the laws that are already in effect, protect the integrity of our profession that we're incredibly proud to serve and passionate about. But we don't want to make it so restrictive and burdensome that we basically just don't want people to go into this wonderful business. So we don't want to discourage anyone either.
George Blitzos, good evening, Council. I want to begin by first thanking the mayor and the council for scheduling this human trafficking workshop. Tonight, I speak on behalf of the Iowa Network Against Human Trafficking and Slavery to rid Iowa of human trafficking. Tonight I plead with the council to lend us a hand in fighting this heinous crime. Traffickers net a huge profit off the bodies of their victims. Specifically, we're asking the council to eventually instruct our city attorney to draft an ordinance to regulate and set standards to create a clear separation between therapeutic massage, the legitimate businesses that do great work and shady businesses that use massage as a ruse for prostitution and trafficking. What we're asking you to do is make Ames least hospitable place for traffickers to do business. For nearly 2 years, the network has been urging local cities to pass ordinances to crack down on illicit massage parlors. Since then, we've been successful in getting 16 cities to adopt ordinances. I've been increasingly concerned about Ames since so many cities, especially in the last 6 months, have passed ordinances. Because these illicit massage businesses have moved out of town where they're under inspection and where there's more risk involved, and they move to friendlier places like Ames, where there's less risk of being discovered. These fronts for sex trafficking advertise online in hidden websites in the belly of the internet. This is how they inform the buyers of sex that they're open for business. The internet is driving the sex trafficking industry, and as soon as one site is shut down by Congress, another site opens. The internet listing ads have phrases such as new pretty girls coming soon, new girl, new feeling. Those are both quotes from ads from last year that were on Backpage from massage businesses in Ames. Photos accompany these internet ads, and they show women dressed in high heels, lingerie, and thongs. Back in May 2017, the network worked very hard with the legislature on a bill, was Senate File 445, which repealed the Iowa Code Section 152C. This repeal gave Iowa cities the authority to require licenses and enforce restrictions and/or regulations on massage businesses. For example, cities, and some of them have done this through their ordinances, now require criminal background checks. There is no requirement of a criminal background check for a licensed massage therapist. Some of the ordinances do that, others do not. There's actually 16 different ordinances. None of them are exactly alike. I noticed in the city staff report that there was a mention that what we might do is just wait for the state to increase regulation. The state does not want to do anything more than license. The state legislature is trying to deregulate and get out of involvement of licensing. So the state is not interested. A lot has changed since the last time we were here, August 2017. That was the last time you considered an ordinance. First, the city of Johnston at that time was the only city with an ordinance, so we've come a long way. Second, there is a growing public awareness of this problem. And since January 1st in central Iowa, 9 traffickers have been sentenced to prison, all operating in central Iowa. Third, massage therapists are now starting to support local ordinances. We didn't have that 2 years ago, and we thank them for that. Finally, the city council have taken a stand for public health and safety many times. We want you to take the lead on this again. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Thea Turner, and I'm here on behalf of the Iowa State Network Against Human Trafficking. We are the student chapter. From a student perspective, we are here to advocate for a massage parlor ordinance. We see it as a definite need in the city of Ames. 16 cities have already passed an ordinance. There's no reason a city like ours, with the amount of students and families, doesn't have something to regulate massage parlors. With the support of licensed massage therapists, I believe that there's no reason to not have an interest in going forward in this. Thank you.
Thank you, Sia. Hi, I'm Diana Crossway, and I'm just a citizen, not representing anybody. I was living under a rock. I thought it was a problem of the big city. Human trafficking is happening here in Iowa. So I came to say I think law enforcement should be able to walk in. They go into all sorts of places. I think we have a great relationship with our Ames Police and our Iowa State Public Safety, so they should be visible. And I think just because a license is displayed, that doesn't necessarily mean the license and the person go together. We need to make sure that these women are protected. And then later, when some of these women are recovered from the system, they shouldn't be penalized. They did not choose to go into prostitution. They were forced into it. So we need to make sure that we have resources available to them so they can hopefully get their lives back on track. Because it's nothing that you would want your daughter to go through, your sister, your neighbor. And until we all stand up and take a stand and say enough, it's going to keep happening.
Hi, my name is Brittany Lenihan. I am a sexual abuse advocate with a focus on human trafficking at an agency called Access. I provide support for victims and survivors who have been sexually abused and help create hope for labor and sex trafficking survivors. What these individuals have to endure is unimaginable. Each person is different, but time and time again, I have heard the endless battles one has to go through every day and have been asked further in someone's healing what it is that communities are doing to help combat this heinous crime. We provide services to Tama, Marshall, Story, Boone, and Greene counties. Each has done their own part to help combat human trafficking in their community and have either already passed the massage ordinance or are in the process of starting the conversation to bring it to their community. I hope to be able to tell them all of the different ways communities are coming together to help combat human trafficking and adding the massage ordinance on that list for Story County because everyone deserves freedom and a safe community to live in. Thank you.
Councilman David Martin.
I would move to have staff bring us possibilities for an ordinance or simply further decision points along the lines of Des Moines' ordinance, adding some provisions to somehow hold the owners and managers responsible, and some additional measure to assist in investigation once you get into a business and find it warranted.
Okay. Those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed or abstaining? All right. Carry unanimously. Okay. The next step that will happen is that it will come back as a staff report. Council will discuss that. We'll invite public input. And then on the basis council decides they want to move forward, then they'll give direction to staff to start drafting an ordinance. So it'll, and then when we have an ordinance come in place, so it's going to take several months to go through this process. It won't not be instantaneous, but the point is that the wheels are certainly in motion now at this point to start moving that forward. But we let staff decide the schedule, but we know it's important thing for our community.
After the meeting, I asked George Blitzos for his response to the meeting's outcome.
Very pleased that the council did put forth a motion to get an ordinance written, and we've been waiting 2 years for this, and the people who spoke in favor. And we get 15 people, including massage therapists, with the same concern and asking for action. The council listened, and they're taking action.
Do you feel that an ordinance that's like this actually does hit at the heart the biggest victim in all this, which is the girl who's being trafficked? How does this really reach that person?
For the most part, what they're considering with an ordinance isn't going to help the victim. It has helped, but the bulk of the women are just going to be moved other places. However, I do know in cities where the ordinances have been put in place and where arrests have been made, that women have been rescued.
This is Local Talk. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and Alex Pfeiffer from the Ames History Center has joined us. Alex, tell us what music we've been listening to.
Yeah, we just heard a track by an Ames band called Sweet Nothing. Sweet Nothing, with an apostrophe, no G at the end there. Then they're actually in the Iowa Rock and Roll Hall of Fame over in Okoboji, and We actually have, this is kind of transitioning with our, we have a history of American popular music lecture coming up next week that we'll tell you a little bit more about. But, you know, Ames has always had a great music scene. And I think part of that's probably, you know, having college students and people that are really excited about doing that kind of thing. But we have quite a few people and places that are in the Iowa Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, including Sweet Nothings is one of them. Another country music band that's called Rural, that's kind of in the Poco kind of genre there.
Very popular in their time.
Yeah, very. I have their album. I listen to that every now and then.
These are bands from the 70s.
From the 70s, yeah. We should say, yeah, this is in the 70s. Most of these ones that did it. And those two bands really got big playing at a venue called Genuine John's. That was
Genuine John's.
Genuine John's, yeah. And that was on Kellogg, just south of the railroad tracks. If you're near Cyclone Engraving, you're kind of in the right area there. The building is no longer there. It was
It burned down.
Yes, and there's speculation about that. But the building is no longer gone, and that was years after Genuine John's had closed. But Genuine John's is in that Iowa Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, too. And I think that's pretty amazing because looking at the research, I think that place was only open 2 or 3 years. And so that really states how important that was, just even that short little time period.
And what a time period it was.
Right?
So much, so little time, so much to do.
Exactly, exactly.
And so much music to listen to.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But there's been a number of remarkable venues in Ames
for
music.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't want to forget Richie Hayward, who was in Little Feet, who's also in the Iowa Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Ames High grad. But yeah, you know, the Rippey's Orchard. And years later, we have, you know, a lot of people talk about People Just Drug in Campus Town. And, you know, even right now, we're kind of at the end of an era with DG's closing down.
So I'm going to take you back to the 60s.
Yes.
Prior to all this, to another music venue that kind of is a once in a lifetime type of event here in Ames. Played a very special role for a brief period of time. It affected many people, including myself, who was a high school student at the time. I'm talking about the bus stop. I'm excited that I was actually able to call up the founder of Bus Stop, George Blitzos, and have him tell the story.
Awesome.
I came to Ames to go to Iowa State University Graduate School. I was working on a PhD, basically in counseling, and I also was doing an alternative service as a conscientious objector. It was at the tail end of the Vietnam War. So the YMCA on campus, the ISU YMCA, had a job. So I went to school and did this job. My assignment was to try to find a solution to the problem in Campus Town on Weld Street Avenue because there were a lot of runaway and homeless kids hanging out there, breaking in, stealing money. So that was my assignment because the whole town was upset with what was going on in Campus Town. Ames kind of had its head in the sand and didn't realize that kids ran away from home, from a lot of problems, and there was really no alternative for kids like that. Troubled youth were always the kids I wanted to work with, so this job was perfect for me while I was going to school and doing my alternative service. I was trained in the youth development model where no matter who the kid is, you listen to them and you put them on equal footing so that they have say over their future. So I hung out, I got to know the kids, I listened to them, and came up with an idea of a place for them to go that they could call their own. Coffee houses were really popular and folk music was really big.
This was suggested by the young people?
By the kids. They said, this is what we want. And I said, well, let's do it.
How did you actually get these young people to speak with you?
You have to realize that I wore a T-shirt, was 24. I looked a lot younger. I had a big afro and a beard. And I wore wire-rim glasses. At first, the rumor went around that I was an undercover cop. And then they started trusting me, and they knew I listened. It took about a month, and I was out there every night, mm-hmm. and I was asking them, well, what do we need to do? And so we formed a little board of directors. We had no money. We passed the hat. We went to several of the stores on Welch and said, hey, we're going to move the kids by giving them a new place to go. Got some donations there. I went looking for a venue, found this place, Lincoln Swing, and he couldn't rent the whole basement, and he gave it to me for $75. So we had a large space.
Lincoln Swing is the building which is, if you are in the Greater Iowa Credit Union on the corner
right
of,
next to
of Grand and Lincoln Way, and you're looking away from
right.
the Credit Union across the parking lot, there's a two-story building there.
Exactly, right.
And a running perpendicular Lincoln Way.
Right. We had one room that became a waterbed room. a guy who had a head shop in Ames and sold waterbeds, and he gave me four. We had a wall-to-wall waterbed. Somehow a foosball table appeared. The kids built a stage. All of a sudden, speakers showed up. I had the kids make the rules, and the first rule was no one over 18 was allowed in. No holding, no using, and no dealing.
Drugs and alcohol.
Yes. I was allowed.
Oh, you were allowed.
And anyone that I gave the okay to. So I was in graduate school, and I got my classmates who were studying psychology and counseling, and I got them to all volunteer because I had no volunteers. So we were given a great opportunity listening to the kids, counseling, crisis intervention. When it opened, it was packed every night. Mm-hmm. At first, we were only open till 10, then we went to 11, then we went to midnight. The place was packed. The kids came from all over. I had very little sleep during that time. Long story short, it solved the problem in Campus Town. The mayor, the council, the vendors on Campus Town, the police, they were all very pleased. But the problem was every night when we closed, there were kids that had nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the kids that were there were local, but there was a mixture of kids from small towns and then runaways and homeless kids.
This wasn't just a venue restricted to people that were runaways or looking for a crisis counseling. This was the venue for all of the teenagers in town,
and
we came.
We had music every night, and it was free. And we had an organic food bar. That's what the kids wanted. That's what we had way back then, an organic food bar.
It's very forward-thinking.
Yes, there was actually an outlet just out of town. A woman that had a little organic food business in her porch, and I was her biggest customer. And then we needed to interact with the authority figures in town. So we started once a week having a guest speaker where they could meet and talk to them. The first one was Ralph Farrar, the high school principal. So he sat up on the stage. The place was packed. The kids were all sitting on the floor. And they yelled and they talked about their problems. And he listened. He was great. Then we had Chief Seidelman, chief of police. We had the mayor. We had a council member. We had all those authority figures that the kids were complaining about. And little by little, the kids said, well, we should write up what we talked about. And I said, well, why don't we do a newspaper? The newspaper became a tabloid. It was 16 pages.
No one would
print it in Ames, so I had to go to the Jefferson B. Herald.
What was in it?
It was the kids speaking. They wrote articles. They took photographs. The reason no one in Ames would print it and we had to go to the Jefferson B. Herald was they had drawings and drawings of nude people. We printed everything. And it also was a report on photos of the bands and their critique. That became what was called the Saturday Evening Bust. The place was called the Bus Stop because it was also near what was the bus depot at that time in Ames,
mm-hmm.
and that's where a lot of kids who were coming to Ames as runaways would be left there with no place to go. So we called it the Bus Stop, and also it was to stop the bus. So it was a very clever name. The kids came up with it. Told you where it was, bus stop, and it told you what it was to stop the kids from being arrested. And the kids loved that.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, gave them a place to go. The police did not come around. They stayed away. Orders of the chief. They self-monitored.
The thing that made the place so magical is that it really did feel like a real club. It didn't feel like it was controlled. Did it ever get out of control? Did it ever feel like this is just not a good thing?
Actually, a couple of times when we started getting kids in who were really intoxicated, or back then LSD was extremely popular, and what they call downers, we call opiates now. And there were a couple of times where kids were brought in that were next to death. And so we started taking those kids up to Mary Greeley. And then I met with the medical community. They bought us an AMBU bag. And anytime we needed help, we could call them.
What's an AMBU bag?
AMBU bag is something that you put over someone's mouth to resuscitate them. And we had parents even bringing their kids in who were high, mm-hmm. and they needed help.
I remember going to the bus stop and hearing Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. Is that even possible?
Yep, they played there.
That was a very popular regional.
Popular.
I mean, they were national
right.
name.
Yeah, I don't know how the kids quite got them there.
Okay, so I'm not imagining.
Yeah,
that.
We had people like Tom Richards, all kinds of female folk singers, a lot of rock bands.
Who booked all these acts?
The kids and the advisory board. During the school weeks, we had more folk music, and sometimes it was just one person playing guitar. But almost every night we had music.
You had to have a sound person.
Oh, yeah. The kids fought over who was in charge of the sound system. They loved it.
What role do you think the music played?
A very big role. The whole counterculture was going strong. You know, long hair, it was the place to go. I mean, we stayed open then till midnight, and kids had nowhere to go, so I came up with the idea we need a runaway and homeless youth shelter. That became Shelter House, and that was the first of its kind in the state. Nobody else was doing this. We were the first, and for a long time, the only drop-in center for kids. Kids were coming from all over, and then we were the first runaway and homeless youth shelter. Mm-hmm. That's what led then to YSS, but it was the drop-in center that led to the shelter.
That led to YSS,
right.
And then YSS led to what we spoke about earlier, which is the Iowa Network Against Trafficking and Slavery. So one, since we're talking about popular music, one spin on this whole really lovely story you've told us is that music has the power to help transform society.
Yes, it does. It's like a magnet. Back then, we had everything going for us, but the music was number one. It was what brought the kids in.
The bus stop proved that you can have good, clean fun and a wild time at the same time. You can do both.
Yes, and the community, for the most part, loved the bus stop.
Okay, thank
yeah.
you.
You're very welcome. Thank you. I love talking about it. I haven't talked about this history for a long time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Okay, thank you so much, George, and thank you so much, Alex, for joining us. Tell us about the lecture about music that's going to be happening through the Ames History Center and what else is happening.
History of American Popular Music, and this is part of our yearly lecture series that we held, and this is actually a bonus one. We got a fifth one this year, and it'll be presented by Michael Lasser, who's lecturer, writer, broadcaster for a public radio show called Fascinating Rhythm, and he'll be presenting about popular music from the 1920s through the 50s. You know, Gershwin, Cole Porter, Irving Berlin, that kind of stuff. And talking about the role of songs in Midwest playing in popular music. So that'll be really interesting. Again, at the Ames Public Library, Thursday, May 23rd at 7 p.m. in our normal spot. So be sure to get to that. But, you know, summer's starting. A lot of things are going on. We also have our highly anticipated cemetery walk that was rescheduled because of October snow. It's going to be highlighting women in Ames history. You know, maybe some you're familiar with. Cynthia Duff, maybe you've heard of. You know, Mary Greeley.
Where the bodies are buried.
Yeah, where they are at. That'll be on June 2nd. That's a Sunday. And there will be a seated program starting at 2 p.m. at the Greeley Mausoleum. And that's kind of the little stone structure that's kind of towards the east end of the cemetery there. And then after that, it'll be followed by a self-guided tour of some of these grave sites. And please bring your own lawn chair if you'd like to have a seat for that. So that'll be at the Ames Municipal Cemetery. And that's presented by Ames Historical Society, Grandin Funeral Home, and Story County Genealogical Society. And then with every summer on Sundays, we have Hoggett School is getting kicked off for our annual summer. And the first opening day of that will be on June 9th. And those usually, and we run from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. And for our kickoff will be June 9th with ice cream. We're going to do butter making and have music. So bring everybody down. And if you happen to miss that one, we'll be there every Sunday up till the middle of August. So you can keep coming and visit us. You can go and see the museum and learn some 1860s hand trades maybe along the way.
And if you want to look this all this stuff up, if you can't keep it in your head, where do you go?
Calendar event of the Ames Historical Society at ameshistory.org, or you can give us a call or address at 416 Douglas, right next to the Pantorium at KHOI, one of our neighbors here.
That's
so
right.
Come visit us Tuesdays through Saturdays.
Okay, thank you, Alice Fafar from the Ames History Center, our good neighbor, and you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris. You also heard from the Fine Young Cannibals and Sweet Nothing. Please remember that you as a listener are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. We're still trying to raise $50,000 this spring to keep KHOI on the air, so we ask you to consider still making your donation if you've not already done so. We are currently at $33,000. KHOI.org is the website where you can donate safely online. Just look for the yellow donate button. Thank you for listening, and we will see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is provided in part by Northminster Presbyterian Church, presenting their 2019 Vacation Bible School Marketplace 29 AD, an opportunity for experiential learning. Children from preschool to sixth grade are invited to visit and interact with a recreated marketplace from biblical times, June 16th to 20th. Information and registration forms are found at www.amesnpc.org. That's www.amesnpc.org.